Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, folks, to another edition of Monday Night Lights. We're broadcasting live to you here on a Tuesday evening. We got another chance to put on another show. We've got a couple guest lines up for you. Tonight we're going to have Beano Cook, famous ESPN correspondent, a fountain of knowledge on college football. I can't express what a privilege it was to talk to a gentleman like that. It was just one question after another filled with awesome, awesome news. And we're also going to be joined by Miami Hurricane and former 49er and Cleveland Brown, Ken Dorsey. And, Ken, is this you I'm speaking with right now?
Yes, it is.
Ken, welcome to our Monday Night Light show, but we had a special encore edition this Tuesday. So how are things treating you right now, Ken?
You know what? Not bad. Just, hanging out here at home with the family. So, living through free agency as best you can with the stress levels. Got the family here to get through it with, working out and staying in shape. So it's been good.
So take us through this. Now, right now, are you currently signed with the UFL teams from the New York?
Well, I see that everywhere. I personally haven't signed anything yet with them, but, okay. I'm still kind of, my agent is looking into that stuff, and I guess when he knows something, I'll know something. But right now, it looks like that's a great opportunity for me if nothing, happens in the NFL. And, I'm kind of excited about that. The team that I keep seeing my name associated with is the New York team. And, you look at their staff along with every staff in that, league, it's, I think anybody would be happy to play for any of those coaches. And for me, I feel the same way about all those teams and all those coaches, and if New York's that team, I think that's an exciting opportunity.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be a nice addition. It's going to seem like a nice platform for, a guy like yourself who's kind of not really had a real shot at kind of getting that NFL, starter time. It's been a nice platform for you to really showcase your skills. And I kind of wanted to look back at your time since your entry into the NFL. I know that the 49ers brought in a first-round pick when you were with San Francisco and with Alex Smith, and then your time in Cleveland with Brady Quinn. Your time in the NFL, did it seem like you really weren't getting anywhere each year?
Yeah, well, it was always, you're always going uphill, and that's what it felt like. And, and that's part of being a later-round pick. And, you're constantly battling, and then, when you get your opportunity, you got to make the most of it. And, when I had an opportunity in San Francisco, it was just a lot of ups and downs, and that's what being a young player is, but at the same time, we were just struggling as a team. So, that's all, part of growing. And I think, I think I'm a better player because of that, because I think, I got thicker skin, through the adversity that we had to go through. But, it is tough because you can do great things and you can be a great player. And, I think what I tell people all the time, it's all about being at the right place in the right time. And, when that happens and things come together, that's when all of a sudden you jump your status up to being a elite player in the league.
Yeah, going back, because you were so dominant in your college days at Miami, and when the 49ers selected Alex Smith with that first pick, you might have saw that coming, but did you see the writing on the wall that you're one step farther from getting to your ultimate goal?
Yeah, anytime they bring in a first rounder, that's what happens. And same thing in Cleveland, you get all the different things that, it's going to be an open competition and things like that. But, they're not putting all the money into these guys nowadays that they're paying these crazy big contracts to have them sit on the bench for a long period of time. And, You know, be it if you do win a starting job, you know, at some point they're going to, you know, let that guy take over. So, you know, it's a hard situation for everybody involved because, you know, that guy's got to come in and you know, do his thing. And then, you know, the current players there have to, you know, compete for a job, always looking over their shoulder. So it is a difficult situation, but at the same time, you know, it kind of pushes you a little bit too. And, you know, I was fortunate that, in both situations, Alex and Brady, you know, they're good guys. And, you know, neither of them were these, you know, arrogant guys that didn't want to listen or, you know, or anything like that. I pride myself in, you know, making myself a better football player each year by pushing myself, but also helping those guys out. And I really feel like I was, able to help them become, you know, better football players too.
Yeah, and your time in Cleveland, you know, I was doing some research, trying to get some background stuff, just little tidbits, and I came across the piece, and you could tell me if this is for real, but I saw that you were quoted that you said in your 2 years in Cleveland, you didn't even know if you actually ever threw a pass to Braylon Edwards. You're not even for fun. I mean, is that true?
Well, I mean, it's that's part of it. I mean, I definitely didn't I can sit and probably think of, you know, maybe on my one hand how many balls I threw to him, you know, but it sure wasn't many if I threw any. And you know, that's that, you know, my first year there I was the third guy, you know, and so you don't throw too many balls then. And then, you know, you obviously, you know, when coming into that next year I was, you know, the fourth guy on the depth chart at the time with, you know, a quarterback competition per se with Charlie and Derek and Brady and myself, you know, but with, you know, so I didn't throw many balls to him that year. So, I mean, there were very few opportunities to throw him balls, and I was fortunate that when I did get in there, you know, that Braylon gave me 100% when I got in there, and I can't, you know, a lot has been said and everything like that, but at least, you know, he gave me 100% when I was in there, and you know, I appreciated it. I appreciated him for that.
Yeah, and I mean, you seem like you're a real mentoring figure to Brady Quinn. I mean, you know, a lot of press releases said that Quinn really, you know, enjoyed, you know, having you, and he requested you. I mean, is that true? I mean, did he really, you know, lean on your, you know, you that much?
Yeah, I mean, I was. That was really, you know, me being the third guy, my primary role, you know, was helping those guys as best I could, Brady and Derek, but really, you know, Brady especially, because, you know, when you come in as a young guy, you know, you're behind the eight ball, you know, because you gotta catch up a lot. So I really tried to help him out as much as I can, or as much as I could, and that was important to me because I wanted you know, I just wanted to be able to, you know, be there in whatever capacity, and I felt like that, you know, helping him would help us all out, and you know, it worked for a while, and then it didn't work for a while, so, you know, that's part of being in the NFL, I guess.
Yeah, so right now, as you're looking to either sign with the UFL or the NFL, I mean, the ultimate goal is obviously to get back into the NFL, though. I mean, that's right.
Well, you know, I think, you know, whatever opportunity arises, that's what I'm excited for. I definitely, if a team called me today, I'd be, you know, all over that opportunity. And I definitely want to play. You know, and that's what it comes down to, is I want to play. If time wears on to where, you know, UFL starting and then a team calls me to come in and be a backup, that's where I'd have a decision to make. If, you know, I can play in the UFL and go out and play those games and be the starting guy and play, or, you know, go to the NFL and be a backup guy, you know, that's something I'd have to weigh in my head. But I think if a team were to call me, you know, in the next couple weeks here during training camp or early in the season, then that's a different deal.
That's excellent. And we're speaking with Ken Dorsey, formerly of the Cleveland Browns, storied tradition there at Miami. And that's, you know, that was a question I was going to bring up. If, you know, if you do sign with the UFL and you're, you know, you're tearing up that league, posting some crazy numbers, and you do get that call from the NFL, you know, maybe for a backup role or whatnot, you know, what your feelings would be, and you kind of expressed that to us. Ken, I mean, to me, there's certain teams in history. I think the team that you guys put together in Miami has to be one of the greatest I've ever seen. I mean, just the pure talent you guys had and the way you guys went through the seasons were incredible. I mean, you guys, do you stick together? I mean, do you touch base with a lot of guys from the U?
I try to, that's for sure. You know, I talk to a lot of those guys. Ed Reed is a guy I try to talk to as much as I can because Ed's just the type of guy, he's just, you know, not only a great football player, but just a good dude, you know, just a great guy to be around, somebody who can make, you know, no matter who he's talking to, just feel comfortable. And, you know, he's just a great guy. You know, I talked to a lot of those guys, Ed being one, Kellen Winslow, I talked to a great deal. I've talked to Reggie and Santana, you know, here and there. I try to go down to Miami a couple times a year during the off season, and you see a lot of those guys down there working out. So I try to, you know, stay in contact as much as I can with those guys because it's a group, good group of guys. And I think the thing I loved about, you know, all those guys, and you really see it still today, is it's guys that just love playing the game of football and play it the right way. And they don't, you know, they don't use football to, you know, to get to something else. You know, I think you see that a little bit in the league nowadays is, you know, guys want to be other things and they try to use football to become that. Whereas, you know, some guys just, they want to be football players and they want to be great football players. And I think that's a lot what those guys have in common and why I like being around them.
Yeah, and I spoke to Beano Cook Friday, and we were actually talking about Miami and Florida State, and mm-hmm. Kind of wondering where that big talent pool went. I mean, is there anything that stands out to you that, you know, why that talent pool dried up?
Well, I think one, there's definitely more competition down there. I think you know, in the past, you know, the three schools have always had a monopoly on the talent there, and they got first dibs. But, you know, when other teams start coming down there and you know, they can go other places and be four-year starters or things like that, you know, that definitely plays a factor in it. So there's a lot more competition, I think, for one. You know, secondly, I think sometimes, you know, it's easy to kind of take it for granted and not recruit as hard or you know, just feel like because your team's having success that, you know, the players are going to come to you. But, you know, you still got to go out and get the guys. And I think that's all part of it. But, you know, I think a lot of it, though, has to do with just when guys get there, is developing the talent. I don't think, you know, you could go to the campus right now and watch Florida State, you know, especially Florida, and Miami play. And I guarantee you won't leave that thinking that the team doesn't have talent, you know, but I think it's all about developing the talent and what you do when you get there. I mean, you'll see countless and endless examples of guys who are top 10 or number one football prospects in the whole country that come in with all the hype and don't work out. And then a walk-on, you know, left tackle or whatever, who ends up being, you know, a first round draft pick, you know, it all comes down to how hard the guy works when he gets there and how well he's coached when he gets there.
Yeah, and I mean, with the talent you guys had down there in Miami, I mean, Ed Reed, Portis, yourself, mm-hmm. Andre Johnson, Shock. I mean, it's just an endless account of just standout guys like yourself. I mean, when you guys would go into practice, I mean, who you know, when you were on the campus back in the day, I mean, who were still the guys, you know, at practice that stood out?
Oh, I mean, you could all – It was amazing because, I mean, you couldn't throw the ball near Ed. You know, I mean, you gotta work him with your eyes and, you know, just do crazy things because he'll find a way to get near the ball. You know, Phil Buchanan at the time was, I mean, he was impossible to throw a ball on in practice with the scheme they had and everything like that. So, I mean, it was tough. You know, so I think just with the scheme that our defense was playing at the time, which is, you know, is why, you know, we got so much confidence in our tight ends, because we had to use them so much in practice, because they did such a good job in taking away outside receivers and things like that. So, I mean, just defensively, it was always, you know, just a nightmare to try to go against those guys, and they made life difficult, but I think that's what made us, you know, excel offensively. We had some great, you know, great weapons on the outside and great linemen to open up holes for great backs. So the competition, I think, was far and beyond anything that anybody would even, you know, imagine those few years that I was there.
Yeah, I mean, that team, like I said, there's certain teams that stand out, and I think time, you know, in a period of time, and I think that Miami Hurricane team you were part of was one of those. Would you even go as far as to say maybe your toughest competition was the defense you played against at practice sometimes?
You know, sometimes it felt like that. It really did. It really did. And the fun part about it, which made it great, was even the scout teams, the guys that weren't playing on a regular basis, you know, who came in later on and became first rounders. I mean, it wasn't one of those things where you went out and they put up a card and, you know, the corner kind of, you know, slouched around and let the guy catch the ball and everything's great because we look good in practice, you know. I mean, there were fights, there were, you know, guys yelling at each other, guys getting after it, you know, from, you know, guys who were redshirting, you know, pushing the guys who were playing even harder. I mean, that's what made us great. I mean, that's what it really did, is the stuff that guys put into it. And I think yeah, in a lot of cases, you know, the competition in practice was more difficult than the competition in the game in some of those cases, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a far-fetched thing. You guys were just so spectacular. I mean, it was a special time, you know, a special team to watch. How about your command of the huddle? I mean, how are you in the huddle? Does anybody else get to speak? I mean, how do you run the huddle when you're in there?
Well, I mean, it comes down to, you know, when the clock is rolling and, you know, it's time to get a play call and everything, the second, you know, I step in the huddle, that's it, you know. And, you know, if you want to talk about something, we'll talk about it on the sideline. We'll talk about it during a TV timeout or whatever, but there's not enough time for, you know, everybody to be talking and things like that. When I get in the huddle, it's time to go, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, I think playing quarterback there's a couple different ways to do it. I think there's the, you know, fire them up through, you know, getting after them verbally, or, you know, trying to talk to guys and all that approach. And I think there's just a, you know, just a confident, you know, kind of do your job and, you know, carry yourself a certain way approach. And I think that's the way I tried to be. I think I like to talk to guys, but I wasn't going to, you know, jump all over them and yell and scream, you know, if something went wrong. But, you know, I think you got to conduct yourself like you're the guy and the buck stops there, and take responsibility for the offense, good or bad.
Excellent. And once again, we're speaking with Ken Dorsey, formerly of the Miami Hurricanes. He was last with the Cleveland Browns. Ken, before we wrap things up, and this has always been one of those things that's haunted me, and I can't believe how it might haunt you, because, I mean, I'm not even an avid Miami Hurricane fan, but I desperately wanted to see you guys win that national championship that you guys came up short against Ohio State. That game, the ending with the call in the end zone, I mean, when you think about that, I mean, what's your take on all that stuff?
Well, I mean, I definitely, looking back on the game and everything like that, I didn't feel like we played our best football, and the game shouldn't have been in that situation. But that being said, I don't think it was the greatest call. So, you know, I think if you're going to make the call, fine, make the call. But, you know, be confident in it. Don't sit there and debate in your head for 20 minutes and then throw the flag. You know, if you're confident, make the call, and then let's move on. Don't, you know, because either you saw it and you're going to throw the flag, or you didn't see it. I mean, it's not one of those things where you get to replay it in your head and, oh, well, let me see. I'm not sure. I think it happened, so let me throw the flag. I don't know what went through the guy's head, but all I know is it took way too long for him to throw that flag if he thought there was a penalty. And And that's that. So, you know, I think for the most part, officials do a good job, but they're human too. You know, we still had a chance to win that game. We just didn't do it. But in terms of that instance, I think if you're going to throw it, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I remember sitting in the living room watching that game, and I remember just standing up and just, you know, just I was so upset. I was throwing pillows off the couch, and, you know, I was like, that call was so crazy, insane. See, I'm from Ohio, so, like they said,
yeah.
Ohio State, you know, I don't think they've lost a game, even though they have. I don't think they've lost a game, at least in Ohio State fans, since, like, 1977. They have I even heard that, I mean, even if I think 38-3 shellacking from USC, you'd still walk around in here while if Beanie Wells would have been healthy, they would have won. So, I don't know how.
They're confident in their team, to say the least.
Very confident. But like I said, Ken, I want to thank you for joining us here on the NFL Draft Bible powered by All Access Football. And we want to let you know that anytime you want to come on the show, you're more than welcome. Share what your news is, share your progress, and whatever you're doing. And we just appreciate you coming on.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for having me.
No problem, man.
All right, take care.
Take care. That was Ken Dorsey. Yep. That was Ken Dorsey, former Miami Hurricane, and recently with the Cleveland Browns. And as he said, he's looking for, you know, that next shot, maybe back in the NFL, or his next shot might be in the upstart UFL, which is supposed to start in October. But he did say that he isn't signed with any team just yet. And like I told you, folks, we also have Beano Cook. This was taped Friday. And like I said, Beano, the man, can just bring it. The dude was just bringing stuff from, like, 1965. He knew every score to every game. He knew Fresno State's schedule. I mean, like I said, just a legend to speak with, a pleasure to talk to, and you guys are going to enjoy this one here. Welcome to another edition of Monday Night Lights, and today we are joined by Beano Cook, whose name goes along with college football like America and apple pie, a true pioneer to the industry. Beano, thanks for joining us today. How you doing?
Excellent. I'm excited. We're now in August, and it isn't too far away for college football. And this is the 140th anniversary of college football. Started in 1869 on November 6th, and Princeton visited Rutgers. It's come a long way since then, and I'm excited about another season. I really am.
I mean, you've been covering college football for a long time, and you mentioned that 140th year anniversary. From the time
it's
the
140th anniversary, it's the 141st year. People get the anniversary and year mixed up. 140th anniversary, 141st year of college football. It's a small detail, but you want to get it right.
Thank you. What's one of the biggest changes you've noticed since you start covering college football till now?
Well, the speed of the players. It's the same as in the NFL. It's speed. The game is, the players are so much faster now than they used to be. Also, it's become too big of a business. It's a business now. And for the NCAA to say otherwise is naive. I think it's become too much of a business, but the games themselves are still great. There's nothing like a fall afternoon in October at a college football game on a Saturday. So, but the big difference, Bo, is the speed. And that's the same with the NFL. It's the speed. It's speed, speed, speed. And it is no longer a power game. Well, you got to have a power game a little bit, but you have to have speed. And even the worst teams in the country have some players who have speed. Of course, the big names have more of them. But still, I think speed gives the underdog a better chance today and the underdog had years ago. Basically, speed.
Okay, speed. Now, I mean, looking at this season's that's coming up, who are some of your favorites? Who do you think has a real shot to win the national title?
Well, I think you have to consider Florida. You have to consider Texas, Oklahoma, and because of the soft schedules that the Big Ten teams have, you have to consider Ohio State, Penn State, and Notre Dame has de-emphasized its schedule. You have to consider Notre Dame. Those are the teams I would think right now. USC, they play all the tough games on the road, including the teams in the conference. They go to Notre Dame, and they go to Ohio State. They go to California. They go to Oregon. They go to the tougher teams in the conference on the road. So I think that SC is always a threat. But those are the teams I mentioned. You have to look at LSU. I think one of the most important games of the year is the Florida at LSU game on October 10th, which will be a night game. A team to look at it, a lot of people might not realize, Mississippi's going to be very good. I think they will win the West. I think they got LSU and Alabama both at home. I think Mississippi will probably play Florida for the championship of the conference. That's basically, I think Penn State will win the Big Ten, SC the Pac-10. I have no idea for the WAC, and I have no idea for the ACC. Georgia Tech's going to be pretty good. Coach Johnson's a very, very good coach. Got him from Navy. But again, I have no idea who's going to win that conference. Although I guess that Virginia Tech's the favorite going in.
Okay. Now, you know, touching base, you mentioned the week schedule played by Ohio State, and I was going to bring this up. Ohio State, I think they're like 84-32 against out of Big Ten ranked teams. They're 0-3 versus Texas and USC. Do you think Ohio State has given the Big Ten a bad image by losing such big games, besides the in-season games and the bowl games?
Well, I think, but I think that they lost to Florida and LSU for the national title. Those teams right now have better material. That doesn't mean if they didn't play this year, Ohio State might not win. But I think the problem with the Big Ten is very simple. They only play 8 conference games. And basically, the powerhouses, Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan. Michigan's schedule this year is Notre Dame, Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan, and Delaware State. And, you know, they 8 conference games and one tough non-conference game. Now, Michigan State will go out and play more than one tough non-conference team. I mean, they also play Notre Dame, and they would go out and play some other teams. Michigan did, but apparently they're not going to do that in the future. I don't think the Big Ten is the fourth toughest conference, but because of the easy schedules, they have a very good chance of playing for the national title every year. If Penn State beats Iowa last year, Penn State plays for the national title. The Big Ten is smarter than the other conferences in their non-conference games. So, Ohio State or Penn State could play for the national title this year. I don't think any other team in that league has a shot. But in the Southeast Conference, you got Florida, LSU, and Alabama. There are 3 powerhouses. Alabama's one conference. They play Virginia Tech in a non-conference game. Now, remember this. To win the Southeast Conference, you play 9 games. You play 8 during the season and then the championship game. Same with the Big 12. Play 9-8 conference games, but that 9th game is against a team with a good record. Now, Nebraska lost to Texas A&M in 1996. It cost Nebraska a shot at the national title. And if they would have won, they would have won 4 straight national titles. But that championship game knocked them out. When Texas did the fake punt turn, it kind of turned the game around. So, again, the Big Ten is just not tough enough compared with the Southeast and the and the Pac-10 and the Big 12. However, that doesn't mean that Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan won't have shots at the national title, and the reason is easy non-conference schedule, only 8 conference games.
So that does that kind of go hand in hand? You know, they get the Big Ten invitation for the BCS. So even if I think most would agree that even if Penn State would have beat Iowa last season, they still weren't in the same class of like a USC.
Yeah, but they said that about Penn State when they played Miami for the national title. I would never bet against Paterno in a big game. That doesn't mean he hasn't lost big games. But Paterno's still pretty sharp. And I don't think he has the hands-on approach that he used to. But if he's playing for the national title, he has both hands and both feet involved. He's a very, very good coach. And in a big game, I would not go against him. But I think you're right. If they play Florida, they would get beat 9 out of 10 times. But they're playing the 10th time. He only has to beat them once. It's not the best of 7. And Miami was the better team in 86. Paterno would tell you that. But they played one game. And Penn State outsmarted them. But you're right. I mean, the Big Ten's not in the class with the Southeast. But that doesn't mean in one game they can't win it.
How about Coach Rodriguez in Michigan taking over that program last season? When that news broke that he was taking over that job, what did you think of it? Considering such
I mean he's an excellent recruiter, and he has another knack. He can spot players that you might not think would be that good. He's very good at that. I don't know if he's kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies, on Beverly Hills. He's the last guy you think would be at Michigan. But, Ohio State had won 6 out of 7 against Michigan. And that's they don't like that. Plus, Ohio State played for the national title 2 times in 5 seasons and won it once. So, they're kind of desperate. But I think he's a good coach. He's going to play Notre Dame every year, and I think the other non-conference games won't be that tough. They're going to open up, I guess, with Connecticut next year, and I don't know if that's a return game, but they're going to play Connecticut in the opening of the remodeled stadium. So that won't be easy, but they should beat Connecticut. I think he's going to do the job. I don't know how much time they're going to give him, but I looked at the list of players coming in 2010. I looked at some lists. He's getting, I think of the top 50 players, Michigan was getting 3 of them, if I recall, at least 3. But, Ohio State's going to be tough to beat, Bo. They're going to be tough to beat. Tressel's a good coach. There again, there's a guy who wasn't the first pick. They went to two other guys before they went to Tressel, and they got lucky. Tressel's, when I look at him, I think he's a biology professor. He's very good, and he's a class act, and Ohio still is producing good material. He's getting the players. Ohio State, will be tough to beat. They're going to be tough to beat. I mean, it's not going to be easy for Michigan. They're going to play this year at Michigan. No, this year they play at Ohio State. In the odd years they play. Wait, the even years. No, the odd years they play at Michigan. So they're playing at Michigan. Michigan will celebrate the 40th anniversary of that great upset, 24-12 in 69, which cost Ohio State a national title. My advice to Ohio State is to be wary. Bo is good, and he can recruit, and he can judge players. He can judge talent.
Now, do you think Michigan was banking on getting Les Miles prior to Rodriguez? Is that kind of the same fate as Ohio State? Tressel.
No, I don't know about that. I don't know that. I'm not going to try to impress you and say I know. I don't know. I don't know whether they they thought they were going to get Les Miles. Notre Dame thought they would get Urban Meyer, and they didn't. But he did turn the Notre Dame job down. But I don't think Les Miles. I don't know, Bo. I think they talked to him, and I don't know what he told them. I don't think he misled them. But I mean, put it this way: it's a lot easier to win at Michigan than it is at LSU because it's in the Southeast Conference. LSU plays Florida every year, and they play Alabama every year. You know, that's a tough task. I mean, that's not easy to play those two teams.
That's the superpower conference right now.
Yeah.
Look at the two teams that were power, teams in the ACC with the Miami Hurricanes and Florida State Seminoles. Why do you think those programs aren't as dominant as they once were?
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. There's enough material in Florida to make all three teams powerhouses, just the way there is in California. There's enough material in Texas. Those are the three states that have the best players, have the most speed. I don't know. I mean, look at Miami's schedule in September. See, they have Oklahoma, they have Georgia Tech, they have Florida State, and they have another fourth team. It's tough. I mean, you know, they could be 0-4. I mean, they could be 0-4 before you know it. So I think the coach is on the hot seat.
I think you got Oklahoma October 3rd. I think they play Oklahoma.
Okay, Oklahoma October 3rd. Their first four games.
Yeah.
First four games. I said September. They have the first four games. Florida State, Georgia Tech, Oklahoma, and I don't know the fourth. It's a tough team, but I forget who it is.
They got Florida State, Georgia Tech, I think Virginia Tech. And then
that's it, Virginia Tech. Look at those first four games. I mean, they could be 0-4 and still be pretty good. And then they're demoralized for the rest of the season. That's brutal.
Now, I mean, looking at a team like last season, Utah 13-0, they miss out on a chance to, go to the BCS championship. USC, Texas, I mean, they were still considered as good as any. I'm going to go there with the playoff system. I mean, do you like the way the college system is now?
No, it's better than it used to be. I mean, we would not have had such games as Miami and Ohio State. We would not have had USC and Texas. And last year, Texas would be in the Cotton Bowl, Florida be in the Sugar Bowl, Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, and everybody's complaining. It's better than what we used to have. We have to have a plus one. And I think that would solve a lot of problems, four teams. But, the colleges, the problem with the colleges, they do not look at the whole picture. They look at their own conference. And Pete Rozelle was able to get the NFL coaches to look at the whole picture, the owners to look at the whole picture. Now it's going back to where it used to be, where you have certain pro teams don't really care about the entire league. New England, Philadelphia, Washington, Denver, and Dallas. They don't like the revenue-sharing system the way it is. The secret of the NFL is that Green Bay has a shot to win. In baseball, Green Bay would have a very little chance of winning. That's the difference. The secret of the NFL is everybody has a shot. The camps are now all open, and every team has a shot. In baseball, the Pirates, Kansas City, 5 years from now, under the present system, will have a shot, but a long shot. Yet, 5 years from now, the Lions could win it all. The Lions, but could come back in 5 years and win it all. I'm not saying they will. But that's the secret of the NFL. And then the colleges, they worry about their own turf. They don't look at the whole picture. You've got to have a plus one. I mean, you have to have it. And they're going to have it eventually, but they should have it right away.
Yeah. How about, I mean, you mentioned some NFL teams. Are you a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, being from the area?
Well, yeah, I'm anything Pittsburgh. I mean, I basically grew up in Pittsburgh, and although I was gone for about 16 years working in other places, I'm a Pittsburgh fan. I'm not a fanatic pro football fan,
okay.
And I'm not a fanatic Steeler fan, but I root for the Steelers. I jumped out of my seat, out of my chair last February when Holmes caught that pass in the end zone and the Steelers won 27-23. Yeah. I thought the Steelers, the best they could do was get a tying field goal and we would have an overtime. But they got a touchdown. And my guess is they're going to be pretty good this year. I mean, I think wherever, if they play New England for the title, they will beat them at Heinz Field. I don't think they would beat them at New England.
Yeah. I mean, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your thoughts since we have you on the show. Who are some of your fondest college players that you hold dear to your heart, some of the guys that you think are the best you ever seen?
Well, I mean, the best running back since the end of World War II is O.J. Simpson. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And Tony Dorsett second. My favorite player is Mike Ditka, who played at Pitt. His senior year, of the 10 teams, 7 voted all opponent teams, and he made all 7. He was one of the captains in the Hula Bowl, one of the captains in the East-West game, and one of the captains in the College All-Star game. He's quite a guy, and he's my favorite. I worked at Pitt, went to Pitt. He's my favorite player. Some of the other great players, Doak Walker is one of the great players in the history of college football, SMU. I never looked it up, but a person who would know told me his junior year he played about 55 minutes a game. Wow. Nobody does that now. I will say this about Tim Tebow. He's going to go down as one of the greatest offensive players. I said at one time one of the greatest five players. I'm going to make that one of the greatest three players, offensive players of all time. I'm not going to say he's one of the greatest players of all time, because he didn't play defense. Now, the Florida fans say he can play defense. Well, we don't know. He runs to 40, according to Mel Kiber, between 4.7 and 4.8. Well, you know, and then Florida fans said he would be a good linebacker. Well, if you run in the Southeast Conference, running the 40 and 4.7, 4.8 is slow. But but I don't doubt he couldn't play. And he might be one of the greatest players, but he's definitely one of the three greatest offensive players of all time. Probably the greatest all-around player of all time is Red Grange. But Doak Walker, Vic Janowicz, Johnny Luchak, Paul Hornung, those are some of the players. I mean, they played both ways. You know, Paul Hornung kicked field goals. Vic Janowicz kicked field goals. Played defense his first year at Ohio State. He was on defense. And then in 49, they went to the Rose Bowl and beat California on a field goal by a kid from, first time I ever heard of the name of the town, Rocky River, Ohio. I think his name was Haig. Rocky River, Ohio. And they had
You know what?
I'm
about 40 minutes away from Rocky River, Ohio. I've been there many times.
And they had one of the great names for a player. They had the single wing of the 49 team, Ohio State. It's one of my favorite names, Pendel Savick. He was the wing back. That's one of my favorite names. But you asked me, those are some of the great players. Herschel Walker, great player. In college, I thought he'd be better in the pros, but can't take away. He's one of the great college players of all. He's the greatest. You know, nobody had a freshman year like he did in 1980. So the greatest game I ever saw was Notre Dame 24, Alabama 23 for the national title in 73. The greatest thrill is going to an Army-Navy game, seeing the dotting of the I at Ohio State, the victors, hearing the victors at Michigan. The one thing I missed out on is a night game at LSU, which I think is the place to be in college football. I think the greatest single scene in college football right now is a night game at LSU.
Wow.
So I answered some of your questions. And
Yes, you have. And before we let you go, Mr. Cook, I know that...
Mr. Cook.
Pino. Well, I just, I always pay respect to, gentlemen that are...
Don't.
Okay, Bino. Bino, before we let you go today, and we want to thank you for joining us, are you going to have soup or salad for lunch?
Oh, you're asking Colin Coward for... No, yeah. I'm going to have soup. Vegetable soup, Southwestern style. It's good for you. It has no salt in it. It's fresh soup. And it's spicy and it's good, and that's what I'm going to have.
Excellent. Well, Bino, everyone here at the NFL Draft Bible wants to thank you, and we wish you the best moving forward and hope that foot gets better.
Okay, thank you.
And that was Bino Cook, analyst of college football, ESPN Insider. That was Bino Cook. Like I said, he joined us Friday. That was a real privilege to talk to such a guy who has a vast knowledge of college football, something we all hold dear to our heart. And earlier, if you were listening to the show, we spoke with Ken Dorsey. He joined us. He let us inside. The note that he is not signed with a UFL team. That is a crazy rumor kind of floating around out there that he is or isn't. And here on All Access Football, NFL Draft Bible, we know that he isn't officially signed with the UFL, so that's something you guys, people out there, you think he's signed. There's nothing official yet on Dorsey with the UFL team. I'm your host, Bo Marchant, and we got a Tuesday edition of Monday Night Lights. We're going to be wrapping this up in 15 minutes. I came across a couple funny things. I don't think it'll strike too many of you as strange. But former Detroit Lion, first-round pick. I believe he was second overall. I could be wrong. Wide receiver, Charles Rogers. I guess he'll be on Outside the Lines, where he admitted smoking marijuana every day during some of his time in the pros. And, it goes back to there's so much money invested in these guys. So many evaluations, all these tests and analyzations. These guys are pricked and pronged. They got to do this dog and pony show in Indianapolis. And then you have a guy who fails the test. I mean, remember there was rumors that he failed a test after the combine. I mean, he even had a slight, his draft stock didn't fall. But remember, I mean, there was the rumors of that during his time when he was getting drafted. He comes out and admits it, and then you have to wonder, how does this happen? They have to know. There's no way that these teams don't know. I think they're only hoping that they stop or they don't get caught or it doesn't interfere with their NFL production, because there's no way a guy is smoking marijuana every single day, fails a drug test for marijuana leading up to the combine and his draft, still gets drafted, still collects a bank of money, the broken collarbones happened twice. In my heart of hearts, I thought Rodgers played well before he broke his collarbone. He was playing really, really well. I think he played 3 of the 4 games his rookie season, and then the collarbone broke. And then they drafted Roy Williams the season after that. I think that could have maybe, kind of soured him, them bringing another high-profile receiver in. But getting back to the point, how does a team invest this kind of money into a guy? They have to know what he was doing. I can't get past it. There's no way this guy could have been that addicted to what he was doing, and these guys didn't sense it. He had to smell like weed. If he's smoking it every day, nobody knew. Nobody picked up on this. He had, coaching meetings, practices, and nobody was aware what was going on. in Detroit? I mean, it's evident that things weren't being, with Matt Millen as the GM, things weren't being covered that well because the team floundered for several years under his realm. I mean, it was one plop and flop after another. Like I said, just crazy how a guy can smoke marijuana every day and how the NFL, these guys, the millions spent in evaluating these guys, you know, like I said, I think they just turned a blind eye and, you know, they just let it fly out the wind. This is Charles Rogers. He's a super freak talent. We don't care if he smokes marijuana. We don't care if he smokes it when he becomes a pro. We just hope he don't get caught. And we're going to sign him. We're going to pick him. We're going to give him a lot of money. And, you know, and then it backfires on you and you look like fools and, you know, the team suffers. And, you know, now we're in, 2009. And the Lions still never regrouped, I mean, since back then. I mean, when was Rodgers drafted? I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Was it 2003? Was it 2003, almost 6 years ago? Rodgers was drafted, and they're still struggling. Still struggling. Crazy amazing. Crazy amazing how the NFL works, how these guys get picked. I mean, you guys, you know, you have a Rod Smith free agent, Denver, he plays, 15 years at a super level. You know, I don't know. How's he slipped through the cracks? Then you have a guy smoking marijuana every day. You know, they have to know. I'm convinced of it. Like I said, I think I'm on cuckoo pills listening to some of this stuff sometime. Speaking of the wide receiver news, Amani Toomer, signed with the Kansas City Chiefs today. I think that obviously shows that they're not confident in the ability of Mark Bradley, who was brought in from Chicago last year. Bradley did perform well for the Chiefs, but it looks like Toomer and Bradley will share time opposite of Dwayne Bowe. I'm not sure how that's all going to gel for the Kansas City Chiefs. That's one of the more intriguing teams, I think, out there. The whole situation, I think it's kind of funny. You know, is Larry Johnson going to explode? Is there going to be some sort of mishaps somewhere where he stumbles? They're going to have to address it. Could he get suspended if something else pops up out of nowhere? I mean, is Matt Castle the real deal? And, you know, one thing I like to look at, and I know, you know, they look at coaches and they say coaches bring in different players or they'll bring their scheme to a system. I kind of like thinking back to the time when the Rams were at the height of their success with Marshall Faulk and Warner and Holt and Bruce, and that offense was just a juggernaut, and they took Trump candidate at the end of the first round. And, you know, in all aspects, it was kind of like, well, you know what? You know, Trunk candidate has a similar game to Marshall Faulk. So you bring a Trunk candidate in, he's going to be able to excel. You know, but you have to have the talent to do it. I think just the system, I mean, every coach has a system. Like John Spagnuolo for the Giants, I mean, having, you know, Aussie and Justin Tuck and Matthias Kiwanuka, Fred Robbins, you know, those guys, that line is so strong. When you have those guys, it makes the system that much better. You know, when those guys are gone and he has to go down to St. Louis and you have an aging Leonard Little, you know, you have a young Chris Long, you don't exactly have the pieces in place that you did with the New York Giants. You know, that system, yeah, you're going to bring the system, but are you going to bring the players that are capable of playing in that system? And like I said, with Matt Castle, I mean, in my heart of hearts, I think – I mean, anyone can argue the character of Bill Belichick, the you know, how he comes across to people. But you know what? I don't really think he cares what you think. He's concerned about one thing, and that's winning Super Bowl titles, multiple Super Bowl titles. He's not worried about what Joe Schmo thinks. He's not worried about what anyone else thinks. He's worried about the New England Patriots and bringing that team home another title. And that's why I admire him for that. And I really believe that's one of the best coached teams in football. And I mean, you've got Troy Brown back in the day playing both ways. I mean, just every player on that team was, you know, they put them in a place to succeed, and they did succeed. And Castle, another example, you know, he's thrust into the fire after Brady goes down after the first quarter of week one, after the Bernard Pollard hit. He goes down. The team, you know, they win the Chiefs game. I think they get beat the next week. I think they take a nice beating at home by Miami. But then they get the team back in the groove, and then they start rolling. I mean, to finish 11-5, I think the first team to finish 11-5 and not make the playoffs, it shows you what kind of talent that team had. You know, when you put Brady in that team, you know, you have to say, really, you probably consume, they probably, you know, like I said, I think it would have been a lot harder for Pittsburgh to make it where they went if New England is in the playoffs with the Tom Brady. But they weren't, so that's another story for another day. But Castle, getting back to Castle and to the Chiefs, you know, this isn't the New England Patriots. This isn't the brain trust. This isn't the foundation and the core teachings of everything that was built in New England. You know, this is Todd Haley, the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, this isn't Wes Welker, Randy Moss. This is Dwayne Bowe, and you're bringing in Amani Toomer. So, like, I'm just, like I said, I'm just curious as a fan of the NFL to see how the Kansas City Chiefs are going to perform this year. I'm interested to see how the Castle thing's going to pan out. I mean, Scott Pioli, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, he was there with Bill Belichick. I mean, those guys did it together for a long time. So he's been there with Castle, seen him grow into what he became last season, confident enough to give him the big money contract. And that's something you got to look at. And, you know, I think a good, you know, hey, okay, Pioli, you know, has faith in him. You know, if he didn't, then he probably wouldn't have ever pulled the trigger because, like most, I mean, a lot of people really like Tyre Thigpen. They thought Thigpen was a guy who could really make it happen for the Chiefs. And, you know, I think he came out of nowhere. He surprised people, played pretty well. But, you know, certain things happened for reasons. Pioli came in and wanted his boy Castle, and, you know, he brought him in. Castle must be a hell of a guy. Because, I mean, you got Josh Daniels destroying the whole Denver Broncos in an effort to get Castle. He fails. Scott Pioli has a decent quarterback option in Tyre Thigpen and says, you know what, let's still bring in another quarterback in Castle. So, like I said, I mean, these guys are the brain trust. These guys get paid a lot of money, and they do know what they're doing. But, you know, we're here to criticize and be an objective opinion of what we see and kind of, you know, in layman's terms, you know, keep them straight. Like I said, going back to the Charles Rogers thing, I don't know how a guy could smoke marijuana every day and then not know. There's no way they don't know. There's just no way. It's crazy. But Castle, like I said, the Chiefs, the whole thing, very interesting. From Larry Johnson to the new coach to the new quarterback. You know, and the strangest thing is so much hype is being built around Dwayne Bowe, who's a fantastic talent, but you got to really wonder, you know, what type of season he's going to have with all this new quarterback, no Tony Gonzalez. I mean, hit on Tony Gonzalez, the staple face of the franchise for the last 13 years. I mean, he's not in-house. So, you know, like I said, I think Tony Gonzalez underneath kind of probably definitely opened up things for Dwayne Bowe when you consider Tony Gonzalez, you know, the weapon that he is. So imagine a healthy Tony Gonzalez and what he's going to do for that Atlanta Falcons offense with the emerging star of Roddy White, who's quickly, if not becoming, one of the elite wide receivers in today's game. Him and Matt Ryan could be your next Peyton Manning, Marvin Harrison connection for the ages. And I know Roddy's coming up on a contract extension, and that's going to be something to keep your eyes on, but I think they should be able to get him signed. I'm Beau Marchant, and you're listening to another edition of Monday Night Lights, Tuesday edition. And you want to make sure you want to go to the NFL Draft Bible. We got the 2011 NFL Draft, the top 32 NFL Draft prospects for 2011. And we also have the 2010 top 10 draft guys, five position. Nothing funner than clicking on those names, seeing some of the guys that, you know, are going to be NFL stars of tomorrow. Like I said, I love doing it. I mean, so it gets you all giddy, you know, seeing, like, those names, Noah Devine and your Sam Bradfords and, like I said, Taylor Mays. You know, I'm a big Taylor Mays guy. You guys know that if you've been listening to the show. You know, I've always been fond of Eric Turner, and like you said, I thought he was just a true beast. And I don't know. Some of Taylor Mays reminds me of Eric Turner. So, little Eric Turner, when I see Taylor Mays going around there headhunting guys in the Pac-10. And like I said earlier in the show, remember this will be archived to the NFL Draft Bible. We had Ken Dorsey on and Beano Cook. And I'm your host, Bo Marchant, and we're here at another edition. And I'm going to hit you with a little commercial break here because we got a lot of things going on. Maybe not.
More live fantasy sports radio than anyone on the planet. 7 continuous hours of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey action each Monday through Friday. Plus 7 hours of game day frenzy on Sunday. 30 shows in all from the best fantasy sportscasters in the business, like Craig Davis of FantasyFootball.com, the Audible Cecil Lammy, Paul Greco of Melnick and Greco Fantasy Sports, and the Fantasy Football guys Lyle Conkiel and Kevin Moore. The Fantasy Sports Channel, only on Blog Talk Radio. It's a schedule you can bet on.
It is a schedule you can bet on. Better believe it. And I was talking with the Rick Saratella today. We're talking a little bit of fantasy football. We're mentioning some names. He was asking about Matt Forte and his thoughts. I told him I was a big supporter of Steven Jackson. I'm always a guy who likes to get guys cheap after they were hyped up before. And I think a guy like Steven Jackson is that type of talent. So, I'm your host, Bo Marchant. I want to thank you for joining us here on Monday Night Lights and Tuesday Edition. We're going to be back next week strong, looking to bring you more guests, some guys that I'm shooting to bring in. I know I'm looking forward to bringing in Cecil Sapp. I'm also looking forward to bringing in Tatum Bell. I'm trying to bring in Brooks Bollinger. And I'm trying to think, I talked to a lot of agents this week. I'm trying to bring a lot of guys in for the show. I reached out to Jordy Nelson to try to get Jordy Nelson on the show. So, looking to bang the phone lines. And this weekend, I'm going to the Hall of Fame for the induction, enshrinement, ceremony, and the Hall of Fame game. So, I'm going to be bringing back a ton of content for the show on Monday. Hopefully, that's enough to feed you guys for a long time. Like I said, enshrinement. Hall of Fame game. We're going to get a lot of stuff with the Bills and Titans guys. I know I spoke with Vince Young's agent. I'm trying to get something arranged with that. Get Vince Young on the show. Fred Jackson from the Buffalo Bills as well. Like I said, just wanted to say thanks for listening to the show. All the peeps out there, you know where to know is. You know where the show is. NFLDraftBible.com. Go on there. Ton of insight for you. Remember, 2011, the top 32 prospects in the draft, and the 2010 top NFL draft prospects by position, something you want to check out. And you guys have a great night.
Refuse to follow the law. I mean, that's the bottom line. Here you go again. Okay, fine. You pleaded the case last week about the law, but there, it's called checks and balance system. I hope I'm saying the right thing. At least we got a
country.
Okay, right. So that the people can say, okay, listen, the guy made a mistake. I understand, Judge. You're the upholder of the law. We're not judges. We're the jury. So now we're going to give you the people's verdict. Come on, Greg.
Antonio Pierce actually appeared before the grand jury, which is a very risky thing to do, by the way, because you don't get your attorney with you when you do that. And there's no cross-examination. It's just the prosecutor. So he appeared before the grand jury, took a chance, and he has come out and basically said in that he's not sorry he took the gun to get it out of the building.
Radio. This broadcast will begin just after this brief message.
Now turn off that TV. Kill those online radio programs too. Because the only place to be for football season is the Fantasy Sports Channel. Every Thursday night, we'll bring you the most powerful primetime lineup in the history of fantasy sports.
I knew he'd come through for me, baby. Terrific.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. What's he doing?
Dad, you know what they do on
Bella and Vincent.
Yep.
Yeah, he was good. They lost to Ohio State when Ohio State won it. He got an awful call. That's one of my good. There you go. I grew up in Northeast Ohio, so I just let you know, Ohio State technically hasn't lost the game. I guess since 1970, I go, he laughed. I go,
I go, when they went out to California this year and got beat 38-3, I go, can you believe that I still heard they should have won the game? And he laughs. He goes, yeah, because we have a pretty good fan base here. And I go, so, I mean, come on, man. I go, it's a national title game. I go, it's the last play. I go, and they make that call on the end zone. I go, it wasn't me. I go, I wasn't even in the game. And he's like, well, he goes, you know, because I really felt like we shouldn't have let the game get to that point. We didn't play our best game. He goes, but then again, he goes, you know, when it comes down to a play like that, he goes, make the call. He goes, don't make the call and sit in the end zone for 20 minutes. It's just the debate. You should be going black.
Yeah.
You know, but he was cool when he at the end of the show. He goes, I really like coming on. I'm like, call it anytime, dude.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Like that little
line
thing over
to
that.
You want that? Get on the bed. You saw Jackie Chan?
No.
You saw Jackie Mama?
No, we saw Gremlins.
Did you rent Gremlins?
No.
What did you rent?
We switched around and then the guy who worked there.
You want to race quick?
He gave me surf stuff for free.
Why?
I don't know.
Because you're awesome possum. Oh, yeah, make some supper, Joe.
What do you want?
I'm full. I don't care what you eat. Yeah, and then I played he was so good, and then I played that Vino Cook interview. It was the first time I felt like I was like,
you know,
baby.
Okay, every pillow we have falls apart.
You buy new ones.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, buy new ones.
I'd love to, however,
it's not for me.
Fired up.
Fish VLT, and you have a loan, $2,600 in cash. I've got it right here in my hand, and I can give it to you now.
Can you update all the depth charts? He's going on vacation in a couple of days. I want to know if I can get it done by the time he leaves. No. But you give me a style.
$200 to $1,000. No penalty for wrong answers.
You have 36 to answer. I'm like, ask him, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. The 2005 Entertainment Weekly compiled a list of the 10 best medical shows ever, including the lesser known Bodies, Wonderland, and China Beach. In four, he remains
so his dad just lost his wife and his dad.
In a week. Hello.
Eliminating the odors and protecting against moisture damage. And when it's
Oh, he was in the movie.
Was he?
Yeah, he's stupid.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know the one, the Greek, is like holding a water pail or something, or a, she's Greek. She has one of those robes on.
Okay.
And then she's holding like a vase. You know what I'm talking? She's kind of like.
Yeah.
Oh, he goes, ooh, look at her. He goes, check it out, babe. And he's like, so he's like a stupid, like, muscle dude who thinks he's,
survive a blast from a high-powered rifle.
That was driving me nuts. Thoughts go out and, you know, like to talk to them.
Start getting paid for your opinions. bigspot.com.
Touching him was a terrible mistake. She belongs to the wife.
Man, here, man, it's pretty again. Go around this junk like a kissing leopard for 2 weeks. Not in front of his body. You know what I'm supposed to do? I'll get built with money. I'll get covered.
This Sunday is another nature's as begun. Oh my God. Back-to-back hours of most extreme weather footage I've ever seen. Raging forehead. It starts Sunday at 9. Sundays are awesome on Discovery. How you going?
I think I've been there. Everybody's back for the BCS week. How you doing, love butt? How's your mouth going, Lenny? Good?
You've got mail.
Just